Welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. Hello.
Is that to me? Hello.
Yes. So today I'm joined by Professor Lucy Rogers, and she's an inventor with a sense of fun, clearly. And she's actually Royal Academy of Engineers visiting professor at the Brunel University of London. And her topics are engineering, creativity, and communication. So yeah, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And I'm really interested, first of all, to learn how and why. Firstly, why did you get onto TikTok? And then secondly, how you managed to get 2 million views on TikTok?
But one of the things that I'm doing with the Brunel students, and this has been going on all year, is encouraging them to be able to do more video interviews, video reports, video presentations, because that's how things were heading. And so I thought, well, actually, I've been interviewed a lot, but I hadn't done much talking to the camera. And so I wanted to practice the talking to the camera bit. Yes. without going really spooky and scary. And if you stare at it too long, it's just wrong.
Wow, so, that's quite weird.
It is, isn't it? So to practice for me, I thought, well, TikTok is a great thing. No one's ever going to see me doing it. It's an easy little app to use. I'll start recording on TikTok. And so I challenged myself to do 3 a day. I do one science into plain English. And because I've written a book on rocket science in plain English, a lot of the space facts I already had confidence with and I knew, so I could easily give 30, 60 second videos on that. One video a day was on communication skills. So little things like don't stare at the camera, but also look at the camera and don't look at yourself when you're recording. And then the third one was just a random. It could be the dog going for a swim. It could be here's a butterfly. And that was more to get me used to the camera. So that's how I really started with TikTok, was just to learn how to do things, find out where I was falling down so that I could give those tips back to the students to say, oh, you might find that when you do this, it looks really weird. If you have all the verbal crutches, then that doesn't sound very professional. But actually, if you take out every single verbal crutch, you do begin to sound like a robot, not very human. So there's the balance there. And so that's how I started, playing with TikTok.
That's very interesting. I struggle because I do a lot of podcasts, obviously, and I struggle with actually looking at the camera. And sometimes I do look at myself, I'm not going to lie, but I also look at my guest, right? So When I'm looking towards you now, I'm actually looking at you as in your face, right? Because I've got you next to me on the screen, yeah? The problem is that really the camera should sit right in between the middle of your eyes. And if it did, then it would be a lot easier. And then I wouldn't have to sort of look up here at the camera and try and talk to whoever's looking at me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult. And my friend Dan, he's been in media and broadcasting for like 20 years. And he just basically is always trying to get me to look at the camera more. But the thing is that I'm just like, well, actually, I don't know. I just find it really quite weird to not have to not look at the person you're talking to. So where are you looking? Are you looking at the camera when I'm talking to you now?
I'm flicking most of the time. So when I'm talking, I'll try and look at the camera. When you're talking, I'll look at you. And if I'm going off on a monologue, I'll flick down to try and gauge the reaction. So it's for me, it's like talking to an audience. And you're sweeping the audience with your eyes to gauge the reaction. So some of the time you're looking to camera, but some of the time you're actually seeing how it's going down, how you're reading the room, if you like. But it's been weird. I know a lot of people put a post-it note next to the camera or some googly eyes, things that actually make you remember to look at it.
Yeah, I think it's difficult when you like to gauge people's reactions, because that's only human, isn't it? To actually look at the person that you're talking to, you know. So I've got some really good tips there from you. Thank you. That's really helped me. Actually, I've been doing live videos and interviews for like nearly 6 years now, and I'm okay with not editing my videos. I'm okay with talking to people and almost having a nice conversation, so whereby I don't talk the entire time, but if you get me excited, then I will talk for the whole time. Yeah. And then people are like, well, hold on, I thought like you were supposed to be interviewing me. But
it's been one of the things on TikTok is that you haven't got any feedback. You're recording it. And so it's very easy to look at yourself, because that's the only feedback that you've got is you there. But actually to record it and to keep talking for 30 seconds to a minute on one subject without repeating yourself, without the verbal crutches, it's been a learning experience. And if you go back even only 2 months through my TikToks, you'll see how much I've improved dramatically. Yeah.
Right. That's super interesting. I mean, I heard you speak actually at Oracle Open World. I was in the audience in the PR room, and yeah, I like your style. You've got a very good engaging way of engaging with the audience, right? And that's what people want, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, I've always found that my mum is very intelligent, not at all well educated, and she's always interested in stuff, but she hasn't got the technical background to I can't use jargon, and so I have to explain things in everyday language. And so to be able to explain things to my mum, it's the same as being able to explain things to anyone without a technical background. And it's definitely not the dumbing it down, it's putting it into language that other people will understand.
I think it's fantastic. It's a breath of fresh air, really. One of my unique selling points is I don't do the jargon. Yeah. And occasionally I get a message like on Twitter when I complain about these people using like acronyms and stuff. And I get this kind of comment that says, well, how are you supposed to talk to devs? And it's just like, well, devs are normal people. They don't need to use these acronyms. And it's very frustrating for people that actually really would love to understand, right? But they get stuck, don't they, in this techno speak, and they give up even wanting to learn, really.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people switch off very quickly.
But so
going back to the 2 million views, because I'm very proud of it, and so I'm going.
I was going to do
bring
that.
Bring it back up. So because I've been practicing with these TikToks and playing with them, and I'd kept thinking, well, why is for the coronavirus? I heard that soap destroys the virus, and I thought, well, that doesn't. That just sounds too simple. Can I believe it? Are we just being told to wash our hands? Because so I looked into it, and my PhD is actually in bubbles, so I know a lot about soaps and surfactants anyway, but not about viruses. So when I looked into it and I saw that the virus has actually the skin of the virus is held together with fats. And just like putting washing up liquid on a fatty pan, it breaks up into globules. If you put soap onto the virus, it will break the skin and it will disintegrate. So soap will clean dirt off your hands by basically grabbing it and then dislodging it and washing it away. But it will actually break down the virus itself. And so I discovered all this, and I thought, okay, if I didn't know that, and I've got a PhD in bubbles, then is everybody else going to know it? Why do we not think that soap is, you know, important? So I did a TikTok on washing your hands is important, but I did it with a demonstration, and it's a slightly different science, which I have been picked up on, but it's a very visual demonstration that if you put a a bowl of, I used water with pepper and oil. So oil and pepper mix to represent the virus, the oil being the skin of the virus, if you like, and then put pepper on top. If you put your normal hand in, nothing happens. But if you put a soapy hand in, you can see that the pepper just goes whoo and runs away from your hand. And so this was a really dramatic demonstration of, and a lot of people picked up on it. So BBC Breakfast picked up on it. A lot of the media picked up on it. It was repeated in different newspapers, online, and schools all around the country started doing this experiment to show the primary school children, look, this is why soap's important. So that one just, yeah, went viral, as it were. And I was really chuffed that I'd been practicing for that time. You know, it's, I've got a saying, stolen from Seneca and actually twisted round, that I say that opportunities occur when preparation meets luck. So I've been preparing by doing TikTok videos. The luck, probably not lucky, was the coronavirus, and soap destroys it. And so I put those two down, and therefore I was prepared and I had the opportunity to actually go viral because I could put those two things together.
Super. But I think also it's because what you were saying was really interesting. And no one really knew it, because people want to learn new things, don't they? A lot of people.
Yeah. And in small doses.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
I've just tried to do a, why would we use logarithmic graphs as opposed to linear graphs on things that are exponential, on things that are multiples. And the video went on for 3 minutes. No one's going to watch more than 20 seconds of it. I'm going to have to do it again, because it just wasn't catchy enough to grab the attention. So it's really interesting how long an attention span people have.
Yeah, it's, do you think attention spans have got shorter then over the last sort of 20 years? Or do you think that we've
mine
just...
Mine has.
is it something to do with these endorphins that we're continually addicted to from our phones and stuff like that? Or
it's difficult to tell. It really is. I know that it takes me a long time to get into reading a dead tree book. But once I'm in, I'll probably then read it all through the night if it's a gripping book, and won't put it down. So once my attention's in, I'm there. And actually it's the grabbing my attention that's the hard bit, because I'm always scanning. And I find that I do scan, what's interesting. Oh, that might be all shiny, or oh, shiny, something over there. So yeah, for me, it's not just the buzz from the endorphins, but that helps.
Yeah, it's certainly a funny thing. I think it depends on the individual as well, doesn't it, really? Because people can sit there and they can watch Netflix and they can binge watch that whole thing, and they're not distracted by anything, really. You know, perhaps content has just got better, right? I mean, I think that to engage people more, you know, there's less room for sort of rubbish out there, really, I think. But yeah. But onto my next topic that I think will be interesting. So, I mean, when you walked into the Oracle Open World, you were wearing a very bright gold, I think it was a gold jacket. Was it that one?
Yeah, this one.
It was that one. Yeah. And so you commanded a sort of interest. People were like, oh, she's wearing that, and it sort of commanded a kind of, she's got something interesting to say, because she's not going to be sitting on a panel, right, asked by Oracle to talk about something if you've got nothing interesting to say. Yeah, but you still have to get your point across effectively. So have you got any tips for people on how to do that?
It's many tips, but how long have we got? So I realized not long after graduating and going into the big wide world, I thought that my report, bang it on the desk, there you go, that's everything, here's all you need to know. And I thought the report would speak for itself, because that's what you hand in at university, isn't it? You always hand in your reports, and that's what gets marked. And It didn't take me long to find out I was very wrong about that. No matter what the report said, if it's managers, maybe non-tech managers, maybe managers who don't have the time to read those reports, I discovered that the communication was really important, the verbal communication. And so I had to start learning how to put stuff across that appeals to someone else and it doesn't appeal to me. And there's a few things that I'll try and do. One is anecdotes and to make it relatable. So recently I was saying, how do you remember things? How do you learn things? Why is it that we can remember what we had for that meal when we went out for that celebration, but I've got no idea what I had for dinner last Thursday? And it's because you've got something else to hook it on, something else that's more memorable for you. And for me, I recently did a video on why is the coronavirus called corona? And it was because the word in Latin for crown is corona. And so I then put, and it was again a TikTok, I got a crown pinned to my head. And it's not my best look, but I will not forget that crown means corona because I felt silly by having a crown pinned to my head. And so that kind of anecdote of you can now imagine me with a crown, so you'll probably now remember that corona means crown.
I probably will, yes.
And the virus, when looked under electron microscope, sort of looks like a crown because it's got all these bits sticking out of it. So the making it personal, facts on their own can be dry, really dry. I once had to teach Ohm's law and B equals IR. And I did. I said, well, this is it. And this is what. And it was just, I was boring myself. What the poor students got, I don't know. But to actually bring some life into it and actually make it relevant, either to them or to a historical figure, that is one of the huge points of making stuff relatable. Other communication skills. Again, things like actually talking to people. When you start a talk, people want to know, I've done this and I've done that and I've done the other. You switched off already. But if I say to you, when was the last time that you had to remember something? Then you're already engaged. You're already thinking about, oh, when was the last time? And so you're now more likely to hook into what I'm saying next. And so actually bringing the audience on board, I'm not talking at you, I'm talking with you. And even though you might be one of 1,000 people in an audience, I am still talking to you specifically. And we're having a dialogue, even if all you can do is nod, smile, clap, and actually pay attention.
I am.
Really? You are.
I've just had to remember something. You're totally right. Yeah, I spent some time talking to one of Britain's leading hypnotists, and some of the stories that he told me. I mean, he used to hypnotize multiple people on stage and get them to eat onions, and they would think they were apples. Literally, right. And they were actually crying when they would peel the onion, they were actually crying. And he told me this really funny story about this old guy who basically, I shouldn't really say this on here, but now I'm into it. it's quite a funny story, right? So he got people to stand up and he said, right, you're an ironing board. So he got someone to stand up and you can wave your arms like this, but you can't do anything else. So this lady's doing that. And then he's got one person like they're a washing machine. And then he walks up to this old guy and he says, and you're a dildo and you've got Duracell batteries. So don't worry. So this old guy, right? This is in a working men's club, I think you'll find. In like really, you know, dank part of like, you know, up north somewhere, right? Mining territory, yeah. And it was the owner of the club, I think. And this old guy has basically started jumping up and down, but his false teeth have fallen out of his mouth. Right. So, so Jonathan has said to him, he said, so, you know, you've lost some teeth. And he said, but don't worry, you just, yeah, you pick them up, but they're not yours. They're someone else's. And no matter how hard you try to put them in your mouth, they are, they're not your teeth. So he's trying to put these teeth in. He's going, oh no, they're not my teeth, please. But like captivating people, and it's like, it's taking them on the journey that they're already into, isn't it? I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, one of the great things about when you're giving a talk or a presentation, and it's something that a lot of people forget when you're doing it, because, you know, you're up there and you're panicking and you've got dry mouth and you think, oh, I'm going to mess up, is actually everybody's on your side because they want to hear a good presentation. They don't want to be bored. They want to know. And one other quick tip there is the first 30 seconds of your talk, you have everybody's attention. It's the only 30 seconds in the whole time that you have everybody's attention. So don't waste it by saying, hello, my name is Lucy and I'm a visiting professor, blah, blah, blah. That, because get them engaged. Get them, give them that hook of, do you need to know how to play more? Do you want to know how to be more creative? And you've got them then. Then you can say, my name's Lucy and blah, blah, blah.
That's very good. I do want to learn how to be more creative. I'm trying. I mean, my daughter did give me this giraffe and it sort of helps. I know it looks like a cow, but it is actually a giraffe. Uh-huh. No one can see this if you're listening on a podcast. But I quite like it. And it's got her name on the back there, you see?
Very nice. Did she make it then? She decorated it?
Well, she painted it. Yeah, I think she was probably about 4 when she did that. So it's quite cool, really. It's quite cool. But occasionally you've got to just disrupt their brain, haven't you, slightly, because if they get bored, you need to sort of bring them back to the point of them, of you having their attention, right? And you do that very well. Yeah,
thank you. It's the by having a mantra or like a call to arms, a saying during your talk or presentation, it helps you as well as the audience, because sometimes you just need to say that phrase, how do you have more fun, for example. And no matter where you are in that talk, how do you have more fun? You can give yourself actually a bit of breathing space of, where am I? Where am I in this talk? Where am I going next? But it reminds both you and the audience what the purpose of the talk is.
That's very interesting. So would you vary that for each talk, or would you have like the same one, which is like your catchphrase almost?
For me, it's for each talk. And these, I'm talking longer than a minute TikTok talks. Prepared ones. Pre-prepared, I need a time machine, I think.
Super. So I know we've got a problem, right, with creativity, and you know, a lot of people, they're not encouraged in life to be creative. And like, I mean, why do you think that is?
It's hard. A couple of reasons. At school, we're encouraged to be creative at primary school. You know, go and use your imagination and write a story and do go and play with the bricks and pretend you're, you know, prince and princesses and dress up in the play box. But as you get older, it's hard to mark the creativity. And so it's a lot easier for teachers who have so many time pressures on them to answer, you know, have they got this answer right? Yes, no. Have they used creativity? That's a lot harder. But if you think back to the Olympics, and when they were designing the Winter Olympics, I think early 1900s, they said, okay, who is going to win the downhill race? Well, that's the person, you look at the stop clock, the person who goes the fastest. Who is going to win the long jump thing that Eddie the Eagle used to do?
I know the one.
Yeah, And it's like, you can get the tape measure out. Who's gone the furthest? Okay, who's going to win the figure dancing? Oh, now that's hard because that's marked on creativity as well. But the Olympic Committee at the time said, yeah, no, we're going to do that. We're going to actually include that. And so they gave themselves a harder job for the benefit of all of us who can now see figure skating in the Winter Olympics. And so I think it's the same thing with schools. We haven't, the teachers, the syllabus hasn't got the time to actually put that creativity in, to mark that creativity. And so because it's not being marked, it can often slide by the way. But as soon as then you get into industry, and I'm talking engineering, manufacturing, everything, managers are there to make sure you do the right thing at the right time. Because they don't want you to suddenly say, oh, I think this car needs googly eyes, where it didn't get designed to have googly eyes. And so you can't, you know, just put something in. Or, oh, what if I make the brakes out of toilet paper? I wonder what will happen. No, you can't do that because you've already had your design and your manufacture processes approved. But, and so you're really not encouraged to go off the script to do anything that's different, because by following the script you make the same product the same way each time. Now with all the ISO 9001, it was when I was in industry, it was actually BS 5750 when I was industry, but that's a long time ago. You can make the same product consistently. I mean, you can be making a rubbish product, but you're making it consistently rubbish. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're not, if you're being creative, it may work, it may not. And so you've got to limit that creativity to the design process, the earlier processes, where it won't actually get you in the end.
That's very interesting. I mean, I think certainly a lot of people, they can come up with creative ideas when they're in the industrial sort of setting, but it's whether they feel like they can tell anyone, right? Because, you know, a lot of managers don't really want to listen to ideas from the shop floor. And like, I think that's the biggest problem in my mind.
It's also similar to what the teachers have got. The manager hasn't got time to listen.
True.
So, I am judged on how many widgets we make to the correct standard. You've now got an idea that may or may not mean we make more or less widgets. I haven't got time to think about it because I'm busy making widgets. So It's actually finding that downtime, if you like, to actually play, to try things, to be creative. And also, we don't like looking fools. I mean, you can't imagine a toddler or a pre-toddler saying, oh, well, I'm not going to learn to walk because I'm going to look silly every time I fall down. You know, no, they fall down, they get up, they try again, they fall down, they get up, they try again. And as you get older, you fall down less, hopefully. But we don't have that same view of failure as we get older. Failure is bad. Failure is, and at schools, failure is bad. You know, oh no, you failed my exams. I failed that test. I failed. Well, what if you failed and then learned something? What if you learned to do something differently? What then? And so for me personally, and to how I'm helping our students try to learn to be more creative is actually, okay, how do we fail, but how do I learn from that failure? So it's a learning point. It's not just, oh, I failed, end of. And how do we not look so silly?
Yeah, or very feel true. Silly? Very true. It's like Thomas Edison, right, with the light bulb. Like, how many experiments did he have to do to create the light bulb? Yeah,
exactly like that. And Henry Ford, if he'd asked people what they wanted, they'd have said faster horses.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah. I'm so hoping it's true.
Well, yeah. Me too. Will we ever know? Probably not.
Does it matter?
Probably not.
And again, going back to the previous thing on communication, that's a story.
Yeah.
And so it helps emphasize what I'm trying to say. I could just say, yes, failure is great and we should all fail, or, you know, don't do what everyone else is doing, think outside the box, whatever. But if you can give those examples of, oh, someone's done that, oh, right, and it worked for them, it might work for me.
Yeah, I think also like having an open management style as well, which like encourages people to make mistakes, is because I think some companies do that very well, don't they? Was it Google or Amazon, or there are quite a few that encourage a lot of innovation, you know?
Some of the companies in the UK will give their employees 10% time to work on whatever pet project you want. So they've got that chance for innovation to try things, to, oh, I wonder if that would work, and go off there. I believe that's how Post-it notes came about, was in some downtime for a chap at 3M.
I didn't know that. That's very interesting. 3M's, 3M's a very, very cool innovator. There's no doubt about it. No doubt. So what excites you then at the moment? I know I shouldn't have given you an ad hoc question, but what's exciting you at the moment? Because we're going to jump off in 2 or 3 minutes, and I want to get an exciting thought from you.
I'm really impressed at how at the moment we're having to do everything over video calls and what have you, and so how people are reacting and changing and evolving. Because at the moment, we don't have the choice of, oh, let's all jump on a plane and go to a meeting or go to a conference. We have to change. And so because the pressure is on us to change, more change will happen and things will go wrong and things will fail. But at the moment, we're actually in that, for me, very exciting stage of failure's okay, because none of us know there are no rules and we're all trying to work out what's best. And so at the moment, we're a little bit more forgiving on ourselves as well as on others, and we're willing to try new things, and for me that's just great.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I agree, and providing, you know, that all this data on the internet is managed effectively, and, you know, I think we're gonna come through this, come out the other side, you know, stronger than where we were before. And at least we're going to have a plan in place, so that if stuff like this happens again, then we can stamp it out pretty quickly. And I hate to say it, but I think privacy will be dead. I think that we're going to probably end up adopting the model that they used. Was it Taiwan or Singapore? One or the other. They just literally tracked the phone signals, and then they went and swarmed all the people that had mixed with the individuals.
All right.
And put them in quarantine. And that's basically, I think it was Taiwan. It was one or the other. And that's basically how they did it. And I think that people, if there's a good reason, they will give up their privacy. Yeah. And I think that this is a good enough reason. Let's be fair. But unfortunately, it's gone pretty far. So let's hope the next,
there's going to be a lot of change, and not all of it, a lot of it will be for good. Not all of it, but a lot of it will be for good. Yeah. And I think at the moment, a lot of people are still scared of any change. And that's causing conflict within ourselves and stress.
Yeah, very much so. Well, thank you. You've been so generous with your time. I really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.